Could you build a business that's better for our planet? That's what I have set out to answer. Hi, I'm Marco Pimentel, marketing expert and entrepreneur and host of the podcast, Someone Like You. I become fascinated in finding creative climate solutions in business, and on the podcast, I break down how founders and CEOs are building climate-friendly business solutions that are opportunities for growth while being better for the planet. I wanted to take a second to tell you about our Season 2 sponsor, Springwise. Springwise is the global ESG innovation platform that offers its readers early access to the ideas transforming our world. I actually started using Springwise probably 10 years ago to review innovative startup ideas, and I've been a fan ever since. There are three new stories on the site every weekday featuring solutions to some of the biggest challenges we face as a global community. You'll find innovations in climate tech, renewable energy, plastic alternatives, the circular economy, and how we can live a more sustainable life. The stories are sourced and written by the Springwise team of journalists and will give you an inspiring take on what's right around the corner, whether you read it to inform your work or simply for a regular dose of optimism. Springwise sets the innovation agenda. The newsletter is free to access, and to sign up, visit springwise.com/newsletter-signup. Conventional fuel solutions, particularly the widely used natural gas, conceal a myriad of environmental hazards. Methane, which is the primary component in this mix, stands as a potent greenhouse gas. It's about 25 times more impactful per gram than carbon dioxide, and is accompanied by a cocktail of toxic air pollutants, including benzene, a known carcinogen. And in the realm of home climate control, a silent but critical battle wages against traditional fuel-based systems and new electric options. In Canada, 51% of our homes are still heated during the winter with forced air furnaces, of course, mainly fueled by natural gas. The quest for more efficient, sustainable solutions, led by Paul Lambert, former director of Area 120 at Google, to envision a Silicon Valley-powered endeavor in the fight against climate change. Paul, now founder and CEO of Quilt, a pioneering force in crafting the world's most advanced home heating and cooling system, speaks about changing the way we keep our home's temperature comfortable. His career narrative weaves through technology, product development, and sustainability, drawing mainly from his experiences in the well-known product development sector at Google. Quilt embodies the mission to revolutionize home climate control by constructing an intelligent, ductless heat pump system, a fusion of sleek design and AI-driven efficiency that bids farewell to fossil fuels. Tune in as we delve into Quilt's audacious journey, poised at the precipice of redefining home climate systems, and explore how Paul and his team aim to usher humanity into a future free from the combustion habit, making an impact, as the company says, at a species level. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm very excited to be here.
Yeah, this is I really enjoy talking to founders, especially that are tackling, you know, changes in our houses, our home, because we interact with that kind of every single day. And I also think that they are really interesting because people don't really want to make a change if it's not better. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the heart of what you're trying to build at Quilt is a consumer, you know, a consumer friendly product that's better, and also ensuring that this is kind of climate forward. And so really excited to kind of get into this. But before we even begin to talk about Quilt and the product that you're building and the market that you're trying to get into, What led you to Quilt? Like, why did you think I need to be fighting? You know, we know that we're heating like crazy. There's issues with our climate, but look, why did you decide that now is the time? Have you been in, you know, climate focused roles before, or like what drove you to kind of make this decision to start and found Quilt?
I'm trying to figure out how far back to go. I'll go maybe mid length, then you can probe more if you're interested. So I had I'm a serial entrepreneur. This is technically my third startup. My last one, I had started actually in Vancouver, Canada, and was the CEO of it for 6 years. And it was an incredible experience. I had gone back to school specifically because I knew from my first startup that I really wanted to do technology entrepreneurship. I had this moment sort of that it was very clear to me that was my career path. And as I was in grad school at the university there, I made a way to access the learning management system using basically more modern technologies like your phone and modern web technologies. And the students really liked it. Professors really liked it. And next thing I knew, I had VCs emailing me asking me if I wanted to take investment. And it was like the greatest thing ever because I went to school because I thought I wanted to be a startup entrepreneur. So I really ran with it. And the big lesson from that is that I kind of just ran with the first thing that had traction. And what ended up happening, and it pivoted into an area that wasn't actually a true passion for me. We ended up going to corporate education, which was super important in for what it does for businesses and the companies, but it wasn't like truly like where my heart was. And it's a really weird feeling to be the CEO of a startup where you're only kind of half in the domain. And we reached a point of profitability and growth where it was sort of an interesting enough business that we had some acquisition offers on the table. And so there was a company that acquired us who was based in Palo Alto that was really, really great at this space and had been doing training with companies for a long time. And they got me down to Silicon Valley. And I was here for the first time in my life surrounded by my heroes. I'd grown up admiring the Googles and the Apples of the world. And I, at this point, felt like I'd never had a quote-unquote real job. Like, I had kind of only started my own things. So I felt like I should do that for a little while and learn from these great world-class companies and see what life was like in the major leagues before starting my next thing. So I did that. I first went to Twitter for 2 years, and there's a ton of stories from that time. Twitter's always an interesting place to work. I will just breathe over that quickly, though, and then move to Google. And I worked on the AI team at Google. We actually were building some of the very earliest LLMs at Google, which was a really, really cool opportunity, especially seeing now how that's evolved. And I kind of blinked and 5 years had passed. I had 2 years at Twitter, 3 on Gmail. And I was telling myself, there's only so long you can tell yourself you're an entrepreneur and be on this kind of, big tech career path. And I was trying to come up with an idea of what to do next. And this is, inevitably leads to Quilt, but my initial guiding principle was I was only going to start a startup if I would commit at least 10 years of my life to it. And that's because having done it before, I know that's what you're getting into. And people think, entrepreneurs have all this freedom, and actually you don't really have much freedom because you're kind of the one person who can't leave for a while. And it's a really big commitment. And the opportunity cost of doing that when you have a really great job at a place like Google is really, really high. And so I kept coming up with ideas and exploring them on the side, and I would play them forward, and they always ended up looking like me being the CEO of a SaaS company again, and I was kind of going to end up exactly where I was before, and it just didn't feel right, and I couldn't get to that level of conviction. So I thought, hey, maybe I don't need to be the founder. I can just support other people who do have that level of conviction. I should maybe become an investor. And out of nowhere, I had a friend who was essentially a VC within Google. It was an area, it was an incubator within Google called Area 120. And the mandate really was to operate like a seed stage fund within the bounds of Alphabet. And really creative people at the company could apply with business ideas, and they would be treated essentially, like I said, like a VC fund. Like they have a pitch deck, they'd have a team, and we'd fund them independently. I say we because I did end up joining that team as a partner on the investment team. So I spent my last 2 years at Google as an investor, really, within the ecosystem. And that taught me two things. One, I decided I didn't want to be an investor. And no slight to any of the investors on the call. It's a very important and commendable job, and I love our investors. But I'm ultimately, in tech, I really like making things, and I really like building. And I found like I wasn't able to do that as much. But the other part that I got out of Area 120, which was incredible, was meeting really, really, really talented, like-minded people. Even within Google, it was attracting the best of the best because it was a way that people could have more autonomy, more career acceleration if they did well. It was really, really like moth to the flame for some of the most ambitious entrepreneurial people at Google. And that's where I met both my co-founders. I'll come back to that in a second. But how I actually got to Quilt was, I had my second child two years ago. My wife had our second child 2 years ago, and I was supporting her. But I was on paternity leave, and I was able to step back from the day-to-day work and realize that, I was going to start another company, and that was really where my heart was. But I was banging my head against the wall about, how do I get this 10-year commitment? I wasn't going to compromise on it. And it just kind of became really clear to me, as cheesy as it might sound, but I credit having sort of the newborn in my arms at the time for this insight, was that I had to work on whatever problem was the most important problem facing the next generation of humans. And that was really the unlock, as easy as it sounds, because what that means is, in the very worst case scenario, you spend 10 years of your life trying to make life better for your kids and for all the kids of the next generation, and you fail. And it was like, cool, you can put that on my tombstone. Like, you know, that's fine. And then what's the best case scenario? Well, the best case scenario is you make really significant progress against the most important problem facing humanity. And it's like, what more could you ask for? So it's like, sign me up. Great. Okay, what is that problem? And you don't actually have to do a bunch of digging to realize that it's climate change. And I'm not saying there's other problems on the, there's many other problems on the planet that are extremely valid, ranging from, you know, World War III to other sustainability issues. But the thing about climate change is that the breadth of it and the confidence. So it affects effectively every life form on Earth, certainly every human in some way. And we have really pretty good confidence around the way things are going to play out if we don't do things differently. We don't know exactly, but there are different scenarios and they're all sort of different levels of bad. There aren't really a lot of good scenarios. That doesn't require a lot of human action. So it was kind of just really clear in that moment I had to work on climate change. And the other thing that I could bring into this is that I'm actually from Alberta, which is a part of Canada where the main industry is the fossil fuel industry. The vast, vast majority of people in Alberta in some way are connected to that. And that's not, you know, that's no different for me. So most of my family historically and even today have, you know, ties or directly work for oil companies and energy companies. My dad was actually the CEO for a while of an energy company. And I think fossil fuels has been really important to get us to where we are. Like, we wouldn't have computers if we didn't have fossil fuels and many other things. But clearly the time has come to an end. And I sort of just felt this like multi-generational responsibility to be part of the solution and carry that baton forward to a better place. So I grew up close to the sort of traditional energy industry, and I really, really wanted to be part of, you know, the solution to sort of the side effects that had been caused by it. So that's climate change. How to actually get to Quilt, and I'm sorry for my monologue here, but I have trouble making it really quick. I just wanted to make the biggest possible impact where I could build the world-class team. And I knew I could build a world-class consumer technology team because that's what I've been doing my whole life. I'm sitting in the middle of Silicon Valley surrounded by the Apples and the Googles, and I have those networks now. And if you look at consumers, they only buy fossil fuels in two parts of their life, like where you and, you know, your parents, your friends actually like exchange cash for fuel. It's only two. There's only two places. It's their car and their home, right? They're at the pump and in their furnace. And it's kind of incredible because that means to complete the energy transition, which is going to be probably the defining thing of our lives, like that, it's the equivalent to sort of the Industrial Revolution or, you know, the Renaissance in terms of human shift. We only need to solve two problems only. And that is on the, that is on the car side and on the home side. And it was really clear about 2 years ago that the car side was going really, really well. I think Tesla had just passed like $1 trillion market cap, and you know there was all this energy around it. But as you dig into the emissions, you learn that homes actually have a larger carbon footprint than vehicles. So your operational footprint from homes are about 20%, vehicles are about 15%, and yet there's this huge mismatch of sort of the level of attention and innovation being brought into the home space and how we're using our energy there versus vehicles. So it felt like that was a really obvious place to start. And then you look within the home. Well, what's the biggest system there consuming energy? It's far and away the HVAC system. So 70% of all fuel use in homes are HVAC heating, and the water heating is the vast majority that's remaining. Beyond that, cooking and other small use cases are very, very small compared to heat creation. And if you look at all energy use, it's over 50%. So you're including, you know, bring in the fridge and also consider AC and all that. It ends up being over 50% of all energy. So it's definitely the most energy consumption system in the home. And then you start asking yourself, well, like, okay, how are we going to get off fuel in the home, right? This, how are we going to complete the energy transition for the biggest lever we have there, which is the HVAC system? And you start learning about heat pumps. And from a scientific engineering perspective, there is no other game in town. Heat pumps are so efficient in terms of if you want to use electricity to produce heat, that it's just a question of like which heat pump is going to become the way that we're heating our buildings in the future. You know, geothermal or air source, and I can get into all these things. But That's why all the policy being created is about pushing heat pumps and all the incentives around the world around heat pumps as a category. But the problem is when you look at heat pumps as a product manager and as a designer of consumer products, which is, like I said, where I've spent most of my career, these things are really bad. Like, they're really, really bad. They're really hard to buy. They're really hard to use. They're ugly. They're uninspiring. They kind of look like they were made in the 80s. In many cases, parts of them were designed then around the user interface. And it just jumped out at me that this was the problem, where I could build a world-class team and we could really, really, really move the industry forward, because it was exactly the type of problem I felt like I knew how to solve. And it was just this incredible lever to bring down emissions and help complete the transition. So that's how we got to Quilt, and forgive me for taking so much time to explain it.
No, it was a well articulated way to get to Quilt, and I think what's really interesting is how you went from entrepreneur to Twitter and then into Google, and then being that investor and then realizing that the connection between, well, I want to do something that's really incredible for kind of humanity, but I also want to do something that's really hard as an entrepreneur and a really good opportunity. And I think that's the thing, and that's the theme that a lot of people are starting to see, is that, you know, doing good business is actually, you know, businesses that are good are actually good businesses, and the opportunity to recreate that is there. And we have to switch, and we have to have this energy transition now. And so I think that's really kind of a key. So, like, and my understanding of Area 120 in Google, the play on that name, is that it's kind of a bit of a secret type of entrepreneurial place to play and develop really big kind of bold ideas. And so, was the idea already there with your co-founders in Area 120 that you had been chatting with them? Or was it that, you know, you said, you know, we need to tackle this. Here are the two people that I knew at Area 120 within Google to take that to the next step?
It's a really good question. And I actually want to just touch on the first part of your question before I get to the second around Area 120. So you're sort of talking about how, you know, solving these big problems are also good business, like 100%. And I think, like, my mental model is that value creation is the flip side of problem solving. Like, the way you create value in the world is by solving problems that either haven't been solved before, or you solve them in a place that haven't been solved before. So that means that if you want to create a lot of value, you have to solve a really big problem. And the way to create the biggest value is to solve the biggest problem. And then once you've created that value, it's really just a question of how you're splitting the value and monetizing it among different participants in that value creation, which, you know, is very abstract. But, like, the reality is that if it's truly a problem, there's going to be a lot of dollars and capital behind solving it, because really that's just an expression of human intent and what we've prioritized. So 100%, I think really great businesses are almost always solving really big problems and unlocking huge opportunities. On the Area 120 side, yeah. So Area 120, the name comes from this idea of 20% of the time, 100% of the time. It's very clever. And you're right in that it is a place to experiment with kind of outsized ideas or businesses for that would be in the service of Google's overall mission that don't fit nicely into sort of the existing structure. That said, the Area 120, unlike, say, Google X, which was doing a lot of hardware and robotics and kind of really out there things, Area 120 was really in service of Google proper. And without getting too much into the internal sort of structure there, the idea was that, you know, Area 120 projects would ultimately rejoin the Google mothership, not even really become independent companies, where X, the vision is really to become independent businesses. And what that means is that there are certain categories that just aren't really good fits, because they're not really a good fit with the existing investments being made inside the company, which is a really long-winded way of saying that I couldn't see Google building heat pumps. So when I got back from my paternity leave and I knew I wanted to build heat pumps, I immediately talked to my manager and he kind of agreed with my assessment. And I stuck around for a little while because you want to have nice transitions. And the very first pitch I saw as a partner at Area 120 was one of my co-founders, Bill Key, who had been working on the real estate sustainability efforts at Google. So the way to make all of Google's owned real estate sustainable, including the HVAC system, so including heat pumps, pitching us on funding a project to improve the discoverability of heat pumps and other home electrification tools on Google search. So like that would be the project. We would build all these sort of almost like a vertical search tool. And I was all over it. I totally wanted to fund this because I just gone on this journey of discovering heat pumps, but I was the only one on the team that had done that. So we didn't fund it. And I reached out to Bill after to kind of hear where he was at. And he wasn't really sure what he was going to be doing next, given we didn't fund that project. But he was really excited about what I was excited about. And so he initially started as an angel investor. He initially was going to just sort of, you know, put some capital in and I was going to run with it. But I knew and so that was with Bill. But I really, really knew that when I looked at myself as the CEO of this potential company, the biggest gap I would see if I was wearing the investor hat was I had no hardware experience. I've done a lot of other things, but I had no hardware experience. And I'm talking about building a real hardware company. So I was looking for a co-founder who could really bring that to the table. And almost out of the blue, I get this ping from Matt Knoll, my other co-founder. I knew him because he had led the largest investment Arian 20 ever made, which was a robotics company. And then after that one exited to the assistant org within Google, he went to Google X and he led the hardware team for Tidal, which is an ocean sustainability moonshot. It was around mostly making salmon farming much more efficient. And so out of nowhere, this super accomplished hardware leader who's really into sustainability reaches out to me. I ask him where he is. Turns out he's my neighbor, like literally my neighbor. He was four blocks away. So we get a coffee downtown. I kind of pitch him a little bit on the idea. He's not entirely sure what's happening. And then we start going for walks. And it's like, you know, this serendipitous thing that I think happens down here sometimes, where we all were sort of looking for something new. We all really wanted to do something in sustainability. Matt started to make investments in his own house, upgrading his own systems. He's very technical, as you might think, as someone like him, a mechanical engineer and hardware leader. And Bill had just been gone on this whole journey where he was putting mini splits into his own home, like never mind the real estate work at Google. And it really just felt incredibly serendipitous. And that's how we all came together. So it wasn't like this was a spin out or anything like Google. And the idea was not pitched there, but we didn't meet each other that way.
Every week on Someone Like You, we dive into stimulating conversations with founders, entrepreneurs, business owners, and the likes who are consciously and successfully creating sustainable business solutions for the long haul. Tune in every week for a new inspiring conversation on leading climate solutions. And if you're enjoying the podcast, please share it. And also, don't forget, subscribe on the platform of your choice and give us a rating and a review. So let's kind of get into this kind of problem with, you know, heat pumps currently and furnaces and kind of how we kind of heat our home. And so obviously, depending on where you live, at the end of the day, once that energy, electricity comes into your house, hopefully it's, you know, from renewable sources, either you have solar yourself or like for me, and depending on where exactly you are and your energy, where it comes from. I'm in Victoria, so largely most of our energy comes from BC Hydro. We have a bunch of dams in the province that generate most of our electricity, and it's renewable. So when that electricity comes into my house, I have a 1974 house that we, you know, fortunately renovated about 5 years ago. So we were able to, and we had things open to be able to do your kind of standard, your standard system. We have ducting everywhere because our walls were open. We were able to reuse the furnace system that we had and the heat pump because it had been replaced by the owner of like 3 or 4 years ago. For us, we use electricity. We have natural gas as a backup because if it gets cold enough, they say it's more efficient once it gets to, you know, 0 degrees Celsius or -5 degrees Celsius that gas should kick in, and it's cheaper for you to do that. And then the big flaw is that, like, where I live and my house is I'm on a hill, and so my basement is always freezing cold and my upstairs is always typically too warm. And I have one thermostat, and that is a Google product. I'd say that's probably the biggest evolution in this home heating thing is this one little thermostat. But that thermostat picks up the temperature in our house in one little area, and it controls every single one of our vents across our entire house. And so there are mini splits and retrofitting and everything like that. But what's the, you know... And I guess in our scenario, we're doing pretty well. We are likely on BC Hydro. We are using a heat pump currently, and it's mostly electrified. But for the majority of houses, I still see oil trucks drive by our neighbors for oil furnaces. Most people use gas, especially in colder climate, you know, eastern states of the United States or in North America, because it's more efficient to heat that way. So what's the big problem with either? Obviously, there's the first problem being that most of our homes are heated through oil and gas. The second problem is those our electric heat pump systems that are currently, and the nuances with all of it. So how do you identify what the problem is, and like how big of a problem is this?
Yeah, I mean, you had a lot there. So I'm just trying to think about which part to talk to. Something you just said that generally is actually not correct is that it's more efficient to heat with fossil fuels, whether that be, you know, heating oil or natural gas. That's actually not true. It's not even close to true. Heat pumps are around 400% efficient. The best furnaces are about 95% efficient. And even at a operational cost on your heating bill, given that sort of per joule or per unit of energy, natural gas will be more dense more affordable on site. The heat pump is so efficient that generally people's heating bills go down. At like the last study I saw was like 98% of American homes, if they were to switch from a fossil fuel to a heat pump, would save money, and the rest are really right at the margin. And but you were sort of I think the most interesting thing you were saying was the comfort issue. So central systems, whether they are a heat pump or a fuel-based system, which has kind of been the default in most of North America for the last 70 years, have a lot of really, really big downsides. And we've kind of been lied to in North America for the last couple decades. Because I remember growing up and hearing like, oh, you know, central air is something, you know, that rich people have. Like, you know, central AC or, you know, and central heating is really common. But, you know, this is what you want to aspire to. But yet, we have all had these issues you're talking about where we know that it's actually not that great, because one part of your house is always too hot, one part is too cold, the upstairs is different than the downstairs. And so there's these comfort issues. But the other big, big problem is the efficiency side. So central systems were sort of invented in a way, in a time where energy was very cheap, and we had a very sort of, frankly, wasteful mindset around it. And central systems are just highly inefficient. And there's two reasons for that. One is that ducting itself is very lossy. So you lose about 30% of your energy in ducts, and even like new well-insulated ducts lose about 20%. So if you're creating 100 units of heat, you only get 80 even out of the ducts into your home. But the even bigger problem than that is that most houses most of the time are unoccupied, meaning at any given time, most of the rooms in most houses in North America are empty. And, you know, the coldest time of the entire year, when's the coldest time of the year?
Yeah, January or February. Right. January or February.
Of course, probably. Right. And what time of the day?
Yeah, probably early in the
morning. Yeah, nighttime, right, when they're sleeping. So people are sleeping in their bedrooms. And the system has to be working the hardest to heat the home while people are literally asleep in their bedrooms. So the nighttime of the winter. And the biggest rooms in the home, where the biggest windows generally, are the living rooms and the kitchen. And they're being heated. And that energy is completely lost. And so it's just incredibly wasteful, these central systems. And 100% getting a heat pump is a step in the right direction. You're going to have a lower energy bill and you're going to get off fossil fuels, but you still have a lot of these efficiency issues. And you know, fundamentally, the reason we got to these systems was because of the constraints of fire, like fire specifically. Fire is really, really dangerous. You wouldn't put a fire in a baby's bedroom, like that would be crazy. And you're not going to put seven fires in your house and have one in every possible room. So what we had to do is we had to contain a fire with firewalls in a furnace in a special place so that it wouldn't escape, and then, you know, move the air around and just heat the air. But you can completely rethink the fundamentals when you move to a different technology, and this often happens, right? Like EVs are not just gas engines gas cars where you ripped out the gas engine and dropped in a battery and a motor in the front. You can reinvent the whole thing and put a battery at the bottom, and you can have a space in the front instead of an engine, and you just get a much, much better car. So the same equivalency here is that heat pumps can be shrunk, they can be miniaturized, and they're very safe. So you can put a heat pump in every room. You can put a heat pump in the baby's bedroom. You can put a heat pump in your room. And what that means is you don't have to have the ducting loss, and you get rid of all these comfort issues because every room gets its own thermostat, its own control. You can heat one room, cool the other. Keep the baby warm while you like to sleep cold. You know, the comfort issues are gone. The efficiency issues are gone. And it's not like a 10% or 20% improvement. It's like a generational step change improvement. It's a completely different way of heating and cooling homes. And it's just fundamentally way better, but it would be impossible to do if you had fossil fuels. And so it's really like the 21st century and sort of post energy transition approach to heating and cooling our buildings. And so that's what we're trying to bring, you know, bring to bear. And there, I think the reason that that isn't that common right now is because the way you achieve that today is what's called mini splits or ductless systems. And they're really unappealing. They're large, they're ugly, they're hard to control, and they feel like a step backwards from that Google product thermostat that you have in your hallway, because you no longer have just a way to set your house to a temperature. Like, you've lost the ability to set your house to, you know, you're in Canada, so I'll use Celsius, but you've lost your house to, you know, set to 21. You can't do that. You'd have to go find the remote in every room and then set it. And it just feels like a regression. And as you said at the top of the show, consumers don't like to make regressions. People want to buy things because, you know, it's going to improve the quality of their life for themselves and their family. And it's very rare people would make those kind of sacrifices for ultimately high-minded ideals around, you know, climate change or sustainability. So we're just trying to create a product that people feel like they're truly upgrading their home. They're getting rid of comfort issues. They're saving money. They have more efficiency. They have a beautiful product in their home that is really well integrated with the design of their home. And then, frankly, people don't even have to care about the climate change side. It's sort of like a bonus feature. I mean, of course I do, but I don't expect everyone to. If people just want to bring Quilton to their home because they're going to have a more comfortable home and lower energy bills and something they can be proud of to show their friends and family, like, that's fantastic. And so, yeah, that's what we're doing.
Yeah, and I love this quote of, you know, just thinking about, I also have young kids as well, and this idea that, like, when they're older and they're like, we used to heat our home with oil and gas, like, why would we do that when we have, you know, electricity and heat pumps in every room and efficiencies? Like, it just seems like a place where they're going to be like, well, that's such an odd thing that you did that all those years ago. And I think that is the mind shift. And I think what consumers want is something that works really well, but very, very different, and approaching it from a different way. So
can I jump in with one thing, though? Just because you just something we've seen this in our beta homes and experienced ourselves. The same thing happens with the thermostat. So when you're used to having a little dial in every room where you can exactly set the temperature in that room, when you go back to a house that doesn't have that, like with a Quilt system, how every room has control, you go back to a house that doesn't have it, and all you have is this like honking thing in the hallway, it feels like you're stepping back in time. It is crazy. And it's the exact same thing. We're like, our kids are going to be like, what do you mean I couldn't set the temperature in my bedroom?
Yeah. Well, I every night, because of the time of year right now, we're recording in early December, and I'm in Victoria, which is a pretty mild place in Canada. But, you know, I take a book and I put it over the vent of my kids' floor, because it, you know, by the time I close their bed and that heat pump's running, it's just gets too hot for them. And so my solution is a book. And yeah. So like those are the things that people are using and doing right now. So you're still in stealth mode. You decided to, you know, found this company with three other founders. You took a $9 million, was a seed round to start to kind of build this new system. And what have you, I guess, learned so far, and where are you at with the stage of the business in terms of the product? You mentioned it's in some beta homes now.
Yeah, we've had an incredible year. And so we announced our seed funding in May, I think it was. I don't know, a lot has happened, but at the beginning of the calendar year is really when that sort of closed. And, you know, at the beginning of the year, it was me and my two co-founders, there's three founders total. And we had some engineering drawings and some vision. But we are out there. We're real. Like we are in multiple homes. I have Quilt running in my own home, of course, as you would expect, but also like people have no association with the company, people who found us through our waitlist and joined the beta program. And it's going really, really well. And so what we've learned is that it's completely possible. There's very little risk left on the sort of technology side in terms of the business, at least for this first product. We know it works. We know we can build it. And we've grown really fast as a company. We're over 20, we're actually at 25 full-time employees. We'll probably be at 30 by end of January. I'm recording this now in early December for people who might be listening to it later. it's going really, really well. And so the whole time we have said that we'll be launching in 2024, and that is still the game plan. And unfortunately can't and won't exactly give dates yet, but that is 100% the game plan, and we are on track, and so far nothing has slipped.
And when we think about the product and kind of the product direction, is this going to be a product, and do you see it as kind of two ways to get this installed? So, you know, the first way is, you know, you're ducting in your home. Really, you can't do that unless you're either building new or you are doing a renovation, a big renovation, because obviously you have to open up all the walls and everything like that. And without knowing a lot about Quilt and the products, because you're in stealth mode, is this going to be a retrofit type of product? Can it be installed only in a new construction setting, or both new construction as well as retrofit?
Yeah, so it can definitely be installed in both. From our perspective as a company, it's a bit of a different customer. If you're selling to new builds, that's a bit more of a business-to-business motion than homeowners directly. And we really care about homeowners and the consumers. Like I already mentioned, that's sort of what we're passionate about. And what I love about consumers is that you just sell to the people who benefit from the value. And if you can do a good job of it, they'll be very loyal and they'll be appreciative. And so it makes it very pure in that our customers are the same people who use our product every day. And so our focus is very much on the homeowner and the end user. And that meaning people who either have homes that they're retrofitting in a major or minor way. Quilt will be dramatically easier to install, or it is dramatically easier to install than a central heat pump today. As you mentioned, like central heat pumps, often people end up having to redo their ducting. And there's a bit of a technical reason for this. So I'll try to keep it a high level, but ducting that was created for furnaces usually are not wide enough for heat pumps, because the air is coming out at the source at a different temperature. Furnaces sort of superheat the air. And that means that people don't upgrade their ducting and they put in a central heat pump. Sometimes they have bad experiences because they don't get enough heat into their house. And it's very invasive to change your ducting. And for all the reasons I already gave, like, I just don't think people should be using ducting anyways, because it's just less efficient and less comfortable. Still, if it's the only option, still, you know, get a heat pump and put in your central ducting. But if you can, you should move to a ductless system. So Quilt is effectively, and I've already shared this elsewhere, so I'm only sort of in stealth mode, but we are effectively a ductless system. Just imagine one that is much, much easier control and better looking and a little bit easier to install, and kind of a much more consumer design centric product. That was made by a bunch of technologists, right? And so it would have all those things you would expect. The reason those are often very popular when people are upgrading the heat pumps is because of the installability. Because you kind of go over the top in the sense that you kind of just have to drill a really small hole through the wall, and you're not ripping open walls. And often installs are done in 1 or 2 days.
And that's something that I was thinking about too, was when you think about the brand and building it, I kind of go back to Google, because Google bought Nest, and you know, Nest is, I have a Nest thermostat in my home. Again, we've talked about the inefficiencies of it, but when we were doing the person that was doing all the heating and cooling, they brought a Honeywell to the house, and it was myself that said, I want to put this in. And so how do you, when you go to market and thinking about your marketing plan, and you mentioned, you know, direct to consumers, where do you think Quilt plays? Does Quilt play like that kind of Google scenario where you want the consumers to drive it, where they might need, you know, a lot of people will need help probably to install these through installers? Or do you go both ways? Like how do you think you're going to go to market with this in terms of the consumer versus also the tradespeople?
Yeah, so the demand is directly with the consumer, at least to start. I think anyone who's built a direct consumer business will know that eventually that taps out and you want to get into retail or other channels. But we really want to build the core of the brand with that direct relationship. And judging on our wait list already and the interest we've gotten, we're pretty confident we can you know, get a decent, potentially quite large direct consumer business going. And then the installation side, we've already partnered with a number of really great installation companies, and they're kind of fulfillment for us. So the flow works this way, that you would learn about Quilt on maybe a podcast like this, or you see it on social media, or you learn about it one way from your friend. You visit a home that has it. You come to our website. You are interested in the system. One thing we're going to be able to do is give pretty transparent pricing, which is kind of unheard of in the industry right now. It's very hard to get pricing. You have to wait till contractors come to your house and they, you know, write a quote, and that often takes a few weeks. And if you want to know what a market price is, you need to do that a few times. And so you'll enter some information about your house, how large it is, sort of where you live, and we'll be able to give you a quote. And at that point, people will be able to put some money down to reserve their spot. And then we will coordinate with one of our installation partners to go on our behalf, as Quilt's behalf, to visit the homeowner. But we're really the one point of contact for the consumer. And that's also coming back from, or the homeowner is really what I should say. The guiding principle here of what we're trying to create is just a fantastic, customer experience. And so we think it's a better customer experience if the people who are producing the product are also the people who are responsible for installing it, or also for the people who are responsible for fixing it if something goes wrong. You don't have to worry about, hey, am I calling the Mitsubishi warranty, or am I going back to my HVAC pro? Quilt is just the relationship you have to invest in, or that you have. So yeah, that's the way it'll work.
Yeah, we had Michael Sacchi on the show from Dandelion Energy, and they're operating in a few eastern states, and they're doing the same thing in terms of owning the entire relationship of, here's the product, it's a geothermal product, they're doing the installation with their installation partners and controlling that entire experience so that it is a lot more seamless to do that. So when you think about kind of the future, obviously the future for you is you want to start selling this to consumers and being able to get out of true stealth and be able to kind of showcase what this can do in homes and get this installed. But what really are the kind of the big aspirations? You know, there's a massive Inflation Reduction Act. You know, we're talking heat pumps all the time. There's massive demand. The government wants to get these installed. Like, really, what is kind of this 3 to 5 year big picture for you when you think about Quilt?
Well, if I go back to the motivations here that I started with, we're trying to help homeowners complete the energy transition, and maybe they're not going out to do that, but they are going out to improve the quality and value and effectiveness of their home. And so that means getting a lot of homes off of fossil fuel heating. It also means making cooling a lot more efficient. So I don't want to ignore the cooling side either. Just like the issue with central heating, central cooling is also less efficient. And a lot of the older ACs have really nasty refrigerant fluids in them that if they leak are really, really bad for the environment. And we have a much more modern and better refrigerant working fluid, and the system is fundamentally dramatically more efficient than most ACs. So even on the cooling side, it is really, really nice upgrade. But the goal is to frankly like turn down a whole bunch of furnaces and boilers. And this product we're building now, we think is going to fit a lot of homes, but it's of course not the only thing we'll produce in the long run. And you can just sort of work backwards from where the major energy use cases in the home to get a good sense of the type of thing we might be interested in the future.
And when you're building these, when you kind of think about the innovation side of it, and obviously the innovation here is really on kind of how a consumer is going to potentially experience Quilt at the forefront, which is a really an amazing way to approach the market. But when you think about the hardware that you're building, how much of it is innovation versus being able to use what we already have kind of in the market and the products and the parts to be able to put it together?
Yeah, it's a really good question, and there's a lot of art to that. And I have to credit my co-founder Matt, our CTO, who's really leveraged his experience in building this. I think he's done both ends of the spectrum, where you do everything yourself and sometimes you just get something off the shelf, and he's really done a fantastic job at guiding sort of when it makes sense to partner and when it makes sense to innovate. And so there's no simple answer. Like, we're doing both. We're trying to solve the problems that we are best equipped to solve and where there's the largest value to move things forward. Modern heat pumps actually do perform really, really well in the cold climate. What you were saying there, like, that's actually not really true anymore. And either you bought an older heat pump or you have unnecessary natural gas, but Mitsubishi Hyperheats, I'll use them rather than referring to Quilt. They're tested down to -20, -25 Celsius and have COPs, which is coefficient of performance, meaning what's the output over the input of over 2. So meaning they're still over 200% efficient, even at that low temperature. So the kind of technology that drives that, we don't need to reinvent that. That's really good. And those are the compressors, and that is the heat exchanger and some of the way that all comes together at the mechanical level. The innovation that we think we're really well suited to bring to this market is more as you go up the stack towards sensors and on-device computation, and then of course the algorithms and the artificial intelligence that would run on top of that, and the cloud services and all the software. So like that's really our superpowers coming from companies like Apple and Google. I think we're more Googlers, but those are kind of the two companies that have given a lot of DNA to Quilt. But we don't need to reinvent how to produce compressors. We can partner with, good manufacturers already on those.
Which is an incredible point, because I think we need solutions now. And time really is a very important aspect. And what's so interesting and what's so exciting about this product is that, you already have it in homes. And that allows things to scale really quickly and start to address the market, which, those are the type of solutions that we need. We're getting towards the end of our time. So I just wanted to ask a question for you that, we kind of touched on it and you kind of showed your experience already with, leaving Google to do this. But, a lot of people here listen are potential entrepreneurs or entrepreneurs themselves or investors thinking about like, I've been learning a lot about climate change. I see it as a potential opportunity, but just, maybe kind of sitting on the sidelines, don't know when to maybe take that jump. And just to ask you, like, what would you say to somebody that's kind of sitting on that sidelines and what kind of encouragement or words of advice would you say to that person?
Yeah, it's a good question. And there are kind of two ways I could come at it. One would be sort of an ethical responsibility approach. But another one is, I think, just a business opportunity. So I think from the ethical opportunity approach, it's really what I was saying about working on problems that you think can maximize the number of human lives that you could improve. But I think actually from a business opportunity approach, the energy transition, which is not the same thing as climate change, but they're very tightly coupled, but the energy transition really is going to be the biggest business opportunity and value creation opportunity of our lifetimes. And I think in the long run, it might even dwarf the internet. And this is because we are going to unlock. So if you go way back to human sort of, the history of humanity, we often kind of unlock new energy sources and they usher in completely new phases of development. And we're on the cusp of doing that right now, where we're moving beyond fossil fuels into a much more abundant energy. And I think some version of nuclear fusion or fission is actually going to be, fission has been around for a long time. We are starting to ramp up production there. Fusion is on the cusp. It's closer than a lot of people think. But even if someone solved fusion tomorrow, there's a big, big difference between someone solving fusion in the lab and it actually powering homes and cars and every other, use case ships around the world. And there's just like basically the entire economic system of the world kind of needs to be retooled. And that's only a bit of an exaggeration. Things are already electric, like the electric grid, grid itself is going to have to be upgraded in really significant ways. So I guess what I would just say is like, this is the time and this is the opportunity and it is happening. And this is the type of thing that you want to be, in your obituary. Like this is sort of like the opportunity of our lifetimes. And I'm just trying to be one part of it, not at all on the energy production side, which is or distribution side. And really I'm dependent on all that work happening because at the end of the day, we're consuming electricity. So as you had said earlier, it's important that electricity is produced in a sustainable way. So, it's kind of like, what are you waiting for? Like, this is the time. Yeah, quilt.com, join our wait list. It's really easy to sign up. We don't require a deposit at this point. So it's just your email and your name. You'll get emails from me regularly. That'll also put you in the queue to get, notified when we have our launch, which is going to happen in 2024. And then, and if people want to, I do post on LinkedIn fairly often. They're welcome to follow me there. We also have a Instagram account for Quilt. And I think it's Quilt Heat Pump is our handle. We're working to get the Quilt handle, but we'll see if that works. And there's also a Quilt LinkedIn page. Those are all the places.
I hope you've enjoyed today's episode of Someone Like You. We're a new podcast, and I would love if you can do a few things. One, please share the podcast with a friend, family member, work colleague, anybody that you can think of that would enjoy learning more about these incredible brands. Please also support these type of companies. They're doing the hard thing, and the hard thing often takes a lot of people to get on board. And don't forget, please subscribe on the platform of your choice and give us a rating and review. I'm Marco Pimentel. Thank you for joining us today. For more information on Someone Like You, you can find us on Instagram at Someone Like You Podcast, with all the links to the podcast, our website, and more information about the brands that we feature. Thank you again.